So welcome to the next in the series of Career Conversations podcast. My name's Justin Langford and I'm joined by three guests today. I'm going to ask them to introduce themselves and I'll start with Andy.
Thank you, Justin. My name's Andy Jones, Principal Consultant here at Coio. So I help our customers with SQL Server, Azure and Power BI. And it's my first time on the Coio Conversations podcast, so it's a great pleasure to be here. Thank you.
And Andy's joining us to talk about the impact of data DevOps to businesses and bring some of his experience. But we're also joined by two fellow podcast hosts, Chris and Chris from Redgate, and I'll ask them to introduce themselves now.
Absolutely. Hello, my name is Chris.
And my name is also Chris.
And we are DB Ale. Hooray! so we are a Redgate-sponsored podcast, DB Ale, just on Spotify and everything. And our job is to basically talk about none other than data and beer. And that's basically all we do.
Yeah, talking about technology for a living is great.
Tremendous. Hmm.
And the guys have been good enough to bring some beer with them today. So I know that you often introduce your podcast by giving a bit of history about the beer. We've divided that between the four of us. So we've all got a glass and made a cheer. It's called Triple Hop. And this was recommended to you, Chris.
Yes, it was indeed. So it's Triple Hop. It's brewed for the co-op, but is actually brewed in Stockport. So my grandparents actually live in Stockport. And it was recommended to me as a very hoppy, lovely brew. And it's 5.5%. So hopefully dividing three bottles between the four of us should lead to none of us having a sore head.
And it's a nice amber ale, very rich, deep flavour. Andy seems to be enjoying his.
Very yeah. nice, thank you. Yeah, like very nice, delicious.
80% of the way through already, good yeah. start.
It's a quick drinker. So we're going to focus on data and DevOps and what that means to business. But before we dive into that, I wanted us to think about what it means for an organization when they don't have DevOps. So what's the antithesis to DevOps and what are the pain points and key challenges that we see organizations when they're working in a traditional waterfall way? Do you mind sharing some of your experience, Andy, in terms of how organizations operate and what the pain points are?
Yeah, sure. It just appears to be a very stressful environment. It might ring true for a lot of companies. Production releases are out of hours, a high degree of stress. Releasing to production, things, that's when you realize things go wrong. So the test coverage has not been automated. We've released, done everything manually. And yeah, it's that very stressful environment when you come in the next day and you start to get that phone call, that horrible sensation where things have gone wrong and you've affected our customers, rather than finding those problems early, as close to developers as possible with a true DevOps culture.
And I guess the frequency of releases, their ability to react to change and make changes with low friction. So the number of releases they can make in a year is inhibited because of that as well.
Yeah, and that's human nature. So when it is that stressful, maybe we have a bi-monthly release. People are so reluctant to release them, they change that to every 6 months, even every year. And then it just manifests, makes the whole problem worse. It just makes that that waterfall methodology, that big bang release approach, and then we're really, really impacting our customers, where the optimal way to do it, the converse, is to release more often, try and automate everything, and build in that automated approach, and fail fast, fail early, and find those problems before we impact our customers, yeah.
And I know you guys have done some research around the adoption of DevOps in organizations. What have you learned from the companies that you've talked to about the challenges that they face in a traditional way of working?
Yeah, so it's really interesting because I think Chris and I both get really differing looks at the same problem. It's kind of like looking at through a different shade of mirror, as it were, because it always seems to manifest itself in weird ways. And I think when you end up, you know, similar to what you were talking about, is you come in, it's impacted the customer, and then you suddenly start asking questions like, what how many nines have we agreed to? It's and then you start kind of seeing this on your monitoring dashboard or whatever it is you're keeping an eye on, and, you know, running all the queries against all the DMVs and going, why isn't anything working? It just manifests as a headache. So I don't know. How would you sum up the problems that we cover?
There's kind of both ends. On one level, there's the human element, like the stress, the pain that the individuals feel, but also just from the top down, the high level view. If you're unable to pivot around certain pieces in the market, then you're going to fall behind. It's
so your ability to react and respond to change.
Absolutely, yeah. Being able to fail fast and fail well is, you can't understate it. There's a really good example of this. Everyone's heard of the game Minecraft.
Yeah.
So Minecraft, they had an enemy that was put in the game, and it was a complete accident. It was this thing called the Creeper. They made this little green thing that comes up to you and it explodes. And it was a bug. So they introduced this thing, it ran up to people and it exploded. And they're like, oh no, what are we going to do? This is horrible. But they figured out very quickly that actually people love it. So why not, instead of pulling it out of the game, why not, instead of leaving it as a glitch, why don't we instead iterate upon that? And that is key. Like, you learn, you get to innovate, you get to build upon what you're doing, rather than failing something, pulling it back in 3 months' time.
I think the idea just comes down to the same thing. You know, even if we're talking, you know, fail fast, fail early, shift left, it doesn't really matter what kind of approach you're taking, because fundamentally, what does it all boil down to? Is a single question, and that's, are we delivering value to our customers?
Yeah.
That's the fundamental principle behind everything that we do. And packaging everything up into bi-monthly, bi-weekly, even big bang deployments, which ultimately takes down a whole chunk of your systems, that's not delivering value to the customer.
There's delivering value, there's just generally being able to innovate more. You can fail and iterate around that. That's one avenue for it, innovation. But also, if you're thinking about operating on like the modern, I'm going to cram in as many buzzwords as possible, but using like the minimal viable product and then
synergy.
Iterate upon that. And yeah, exactly. That just becomes a lot more feasible if you're releasing continuously rather than releasing with those big bangs and only doing three major updates a year.
So a lot of the benefits that you outlined could have answered the question, what are the benefits for customers of moving to cloud? Mm. So the ability to respond to market needs and dynamically respond to changes faster. What's the intersection that you see between DevOps and cloud adoption by customers?
That's a good question.
That's a really good question.
So do you see customers doing DevOps on on-prem workloads, or do you see customers migrating to cloud, then adopting DevOps?
I'd say there's probably a correlation. It's not something I've considered before, and this is literally just plucking numbers out my wazoo, but I'd say there's a loose correlation rather than a tight correlation, but I'd say there probably is a correlation.
And do you think that's because of organizations that are early adopters to cloud being more forward thinking and more ready for change? And
Especially things like, so if you talk to people about Azure DevOps, people really embrace Azure DevOps. And we're kind of weird because when we talk about Azure DevOps and when we demo Azure DevOps, we're always doing Azure DevOps on-premise. And most of the people we're talking to are using cloud Azure DevOps.
Yeah, this is true. But then that's out of necessity for repeatability. Yeah. Whereas I would say there's definitely a correlation, but then you also have to bear in mind that there are going to be customers whose systems are so monolithic, not just because they're, you know, oh, we're heavily restrained or heavily regulated by certain industries. We are government, military, healthcare, and we've got to worry about complying with things like the GDPR, the California Consumer Privacy Act, these sorts of things. And there is a lot of concern about people moving those workloads to cloud.
Especially when you've got like data boundary problems and wondering where the data centers are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is there a data center in the UK? Is this still going on?
Yeah.
Because for ages, that was a big problem for a lot of clients, right? That they're going to offsite everything out of national borders to Ireland if you're going with Azure.
Yeah, people talk about data repatriation as a result of that data movement. But I would argue that it's not just the actual regulatory concerns around that data. It's just that they've been in business so long. You talk about some of these kind of key companies, these huge companies that have developed over time with system stacked upon system, and you've got all the, you know, basically everything's plugged together with twisty copper wire and COBOL, and that's how all these banking systems are stuck together. And trying to unpick a lot of that and move that to the cloud
for
is
sure, like ease of adoption,
difficult.
ease of adoption when it comes to adopting DevOps practices and ease of adoption when it comes to the cloud, I'd say are going to be very closely linked. If you're starting a new project fresh, you've got
greenfield opportunities.
Exactly. Yeah. Then you can just jump straight into the cloud. You can't just start off with source control and CI and CD because...
Well, that's it, yeah. Another key benefit of DevOps is you're deploying exactly the same thing, that artifact, through your pipeline from test to pre-production to production. So to add in another destination to that, a cloud destination, to deploy that artifact becomes a trivial process. So for a migration project, you can add in another destination, deploy that artifact to a cloud database rather than your on-premises database, run all your tests in an automated fashion, and verify that that code is going to work.
We see that a lot, actually. Like there was like this big push a few years ago where everyone's saying, oh, everyone's going to be in the cloud. And these days, I'd say that Microsoft themselves, I say this so many times, people are going to be like, that's your catchphrase. But Microsoft themselves will say hybrid is probably where people are trending towards, rather than saying it's trending towards the cloud. And that kind of setup, like you've just described, we see that a lot. Mm-hmm. Like development takes place on-premise, and then you'll have your pipeline that deploys out to cloud environments.
And I guess the economic model of cloud lends itself where you could deploy to a container service, Kubernetes, provision that environment, deploy some test data, run some tests and tear that environment down and just pay for the compute and storage that you consume in that.
And that's critical, yeah, creating that environment as well, infrastructure as code in an automated fashion, so you know your test, your staging, your production environments are not similar, they're exactly the same. So trying to alleviate those configuration problems that we get that we realize we've got when we get to production.
That makes perfect sense. And I think just to echo the fact as well is that there are lots of factors that prevent people from moving to the cloud. There's lots of factors that prevent people from doing data DevOps. And I think a lot of those factors are tied up with people when it comes to knowledge gaps. And you know, some people either need to look at, well, okay, we're going to have to go outside of our catchment area. Everyone tries to hire expertise from around where their offices and HQs are based.
Yeah.
But people are starting to realize, actually, we need to break that down and start looking for specialisms wherever they may exist. We just need to up our, say, remote working game and actually just take the deep dive to either A, get in some expertise, i.e. hire in, or actually, I'm going to go out and we're going to spend some definitely well worth it money to hire in experts in this, like Kalia.
If only you knew someone who did that.
Yes, exactly.
And I guess that leads on to an interesting point of this is more than just a technology challenge, right? And organisations that buy tooling to help them on this journey have taken a good step in the right direction, but aren't necessarily going to realise the benefits unless they undergo some other transformation. What have you learned from customers that have adopted DevOps about the steps and the critical success factors for organisations that do embrace DevOps and pull it off? They really deliver.
So people tend to get stuck, in my experience at least. Correct me if you disagree.
Don't look at me.
Yeah, well, you never know. If they're trying to do a million miles an hour. So I want to go from year dot to Skyscanner. And
Skyscanner release, 100, 200 times a day?
Like, it's great to have that as an aspiration, but if you're going to say, I'm going to run a marathon, or if I'm going to say, I'm going to run a marathon, I'll use that example because I'm definitely not running a marathon anytime soon. If I was going to say that, then I would not start by running the marathon. I would start by taking small steps. I would do a 5K, do a 10K, probably do a few, and slowly build up my time and distance until I felt I could do that. And so I would say that people who start off thinking about what they can do to begin with and then looking to iterate the process, so iterating upon their software development, but also iterating the process itself.
I think if you think about moving to data or DevOps, we'll call it, say what it is, right? It's moving to DevOps for the database. As people approach it, they tend to approach it in one of two ways, which is, we're not ready, what's the bare minimum we can do? Or we're going to try and do all of it. But in itself, that's basically a Big Bang deployment, right? Yeah. We're going to get a whole new system in, it's amazing, and you end up in the situation that you're in with the Phoenix Project, right? And Phoenix Project is probably one of my favorite books of all time, and you end up kind of trying to release DevOps as a Big Bang deployment, which wonderfully, ironically, means that it's going to fail. But if you actually break it down, you identify the success criteria, you realize what the most important steps to take on that journey are, you have the right people, the right tools, and the process to support that, then you ultimately end up in this successful place where you are like Skyscanner or Absa Bank or someone like that who basically can just release whenever they like because they've got all of the methods in place, the pull request automation, the CI builds with TSQLT testing in them, the packaging up of artifacts. They're leveraging things like Azure DevOps or Octopus Deploy or other orchestration tools to really make sure that that process is just straightforward, end-to-end, slick as you like.
Yeah, some people go through that. The process of adopting a better process. That's a bit of a weird idea. They go through that quick. Some go through it quicker than others.
Yeah.
So sometimes we'll talk to people and their process is our developers will write change scripts for the database and then someone else deploys that change script. And like fundamentally, that is the process. Like that doesn't change. It's just you add more sophistication in there to get away from those manual steps.
To shift left, to fail early, yeah. To fail fast.
Yeah. And DevOps does lend itself to that sort of thing because you can introduce those things incrementally. You could just automate your testing as a first step, incrementally add in automated builds. Nobody's going to rip out their architecture, start doing microservices and continuous deployment straight away. Like you said, you're just going to fail if you try and do that.
Even like more basic than that, but just version controlling. Like the amount of people who don't version control the database.
It's a lot.
It's a lot because it's not easy. Like you can't really version control the database without some tooling.
Yeah, and you've got to think about, there's lots of complexities that come with the database as well. It's not application code. We're
state.
Not sitting there.
Yeah.
State-based is the absolute bane of my life because people start building database objects and they realize, oh, we've got cross database dependencies. And actually it turns out that deferred name resolution counts for nothing because we're invoking certain stored procedures to test them and actually realize that because we don't have those dependencies available, it all falls over. And then you've got things like complex. The problem with state is that you end up in a position where all of your upgrade scripts are going to be potentially fundamentally different at deployment time because it's reliant on some kind of tool to actually look at the source and the target and figure out what's different, especially if there's any drift on the target environment. Again, hotfixes we could talk about forever. Hotfixes are not part of DevOps, and fundamentally
on that, rollbacks.
Oh, rollbacks are not part of DevOps. No, rollbacks can be part of DevOps, but I'm a big fan of rolling forwards. But if the change script is always going to be different, then what you approved is different from what's being deployed.
Yeah.
Especially if you start adding not nullable columns to tables, and then your differencing engine goes, I know what this table needs, I'm going to drop it, and then recreate it. Who cares about data? So, and then everything is, we're going to have to restore a backup.
To me, if we take that situation of the client who their developers write scripts, they give it to the DBA runs the script. So the first step you do, very simple step, is you just give them a version control system. You say, okay, take those scripts you just written, put them in version control, and then we'll look at how you can take the running of the script and make that easier. And then we'll look at how you capture that in version control in the first place and write those scripts and make that easier.
Granularity, accountability, not blame.
Hmm.
Absolutely, yeah. And then you can start introducing a test-driven development culture, and then you're really off to the races where you end up with modular, maintainable code. If you're writing that test first, then you don't end up with that mess, that big monolithic mess of SQL Server code to maintain.
So when I think about some of the customers that we've worked with, Andy, they might be pharmaceutical, retail, financial services, gambling. They have insisted that they need a full copy of production data in order to undertake any testing, and they have a release cadence or frequency where they might release 3 or 4 times a year. And we've got not a trivial amount, quite a significant amount of customers that operate in that way and will table objections to changing the way that they work because the business cannot test or validate any functionality that they want to release without a complete set of the data.
Yeah, that's a very common, relying on production for non-production environments. And of course, there's huge security risks around that. Your security governance and compliance around non-production is usually lower than production. So we need to do that in a far better way. So yeah, there's different levels of testing. The first level is your functional unit tests, and they should be self-contained. They should generate their own test data to test the database. We're not relying on any production data. And then, for integration and performance testing, then we want to generate that data as part of that release pipeline. Again, some tooling maybe around that, if there's a company that could produce a test.
Do you know anyone?
Who could that be?
Maybe, I don't know. Is it SQL Perdition? SQL Persimmon? SQL Provision? That could do it.
That's the one.
That's the one with the masking and the cloning and such.
From that famous Blue Door company.
And SQL Data Generator, isn't it? That's
also a good one. You can plug that into your CI build, absolutely.
Exactly. That's what I've used, and that is brilliant in terms of if you've got products or countries. It gives you representative data.
So the data is the same shape as prod.
Exactly, And you can specify. So say you're expecting 10 million rows in your fact table. You can put in 20 or 30 million rows for your performance testing to really stress that test system and
scale
make
it.
Sure that you're going to get performance in production rather than having that shock when we get there. And we've got, even though it's functionally correct, production, we've got a different data set, different query plans maybe. So SQL Server, it's a cost-based optimizer with different data sets. We could get a different query plan, and then it just falls over and we get a complete mess in production. So testing with that representative data set is key,
What's really cool about that is like spinning up those environments just as and when you need them. So that idea of just...
persistent non-prod environments.
Exactly. You push a change through a pipe and it spins up the environments as it deploys out. You need so much less compute because you're not running 12, 16 persistent test environments at any one time.
Absolutely, Cattle not pets, isn't it? Yeah, and then you get that consistency I mentioned earlier as well. Every time you create that in an automated fashion, it's the same.
So your confidence in the test results is way higher.
Absolutely, yeah.
This is probably my favourite thing about... obviously, there are lots of tools and, we're here from Redgate and we can talk about SQL provision and we can talk about creating dedicated development environments and why they're better than shared environments. And fundamentally, again, dedicated development environments... Say it with me, dedicated development environments much better for Git branching and merging strategies. You want to do Git flow, well, that's great. Working in a shared environment, that ain't going to work for you. And that's one of the best things about using...
I feel like you're about to... just come out with a rap song. You're waving your arms
listen
around.
Listen to me. No, I'm just... obviously, regardless whether you use something like Redgate's SQL provision or you use any other solution out there on the market for creating those environments, the best thing is that there's a ton of different ways of creating pre-prod environments that look exactly like production, down to the exact number of rows. Obviously, there's tons of solutions out there for data masking as well, so regulatory concerns can be addressed. Static data masking, dynamic data masking, you can implement transparent data encryption, doesn't really matter. Use a solution that creates those environments, and then again, your query plans are going to be kind of roughly the same. You're going to make sure you're getting an appropriate indication of how your queries are going to run, how your work is going to affect production, but they are completely ephemeral. So I've created a new branch in Azure DevOps. Fantastic. Here's a new environment. Link to it. Commit, push, and then pull request automation. Everything gets approved. There's a build. It deploys to a non-persistent environment. Everything gets checked. That's fine. Blow everything away. Merges into master. Builds, deploys, and hallelujah, you're at DevOps ecstasy.
There was something you were describing to me earlier today. I swear it was a customer example where you said someone saw a bug that needed fixing, so they created a new branch, pulled it down, fixed the branch, checked it back in, all while they had another environment running with the work they were currently doing at the time.
Yeah, exactly. And basically what they did was they had a Git hook, which they created a bug fix branch, which immediately span up an additional environment alongside it, and they were able to make the relevant change to that bug branch, and then naturally... they merged that back in. They had an approver, a DBA in this case, who had kind of overriding DBA power and merged. They basically approved that and they span up an environment, deployed to it, checked it, everything was fine. Then they merged that back in and they were able to push out that bug fix within, I think he said, 54 minutes of finding the bug. And they were able to deploy that despite the fact he already had work persisting on one other environment for a feature branch. And I think that's
the future
DevOps.
Is here.
The future is here. Welcome to the year 3000.
So a lot of organizations buy into this, and we work with a lot of organizations that run their business on SharePoint 2010, Dynamics 2014, BizTalk to integrate it on-prem. And they've got a couple of desires, I guess. One is to move to cloud and to leverage platform as a service. And the other is to reduce the time to release and improve the quality of those releases. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of at both ends of a spectrum whereby they're wrangling legacy architecture, application stack, and a lot of bespoke logic that's built on top of Box products. But their ambition is to leapfrog a cloud migration with infrastructure as a service and move to a much more agile and dynamic platform to take the benefits of cloud. Because what they don't want to do is run their same legacy app stack in a cloud platform, because that's not very cost effective. There's a lot of engineering effort, and they're not going to deliver the benefits of cloud which the organization want. So if you think about that paradigm shift, you know, technically and organizationally, what's the biggest challenge, or where should these guys focus in trying to move closer towards that model?
Well, my initial response is going to sound really pompous, but I'd say that it's a lot more around culture than technology.
Yep.
It is a lot more about mentality than people think. When you sell people that you can do X, Y, Z and you can achieve all of that, there is some people who instantly, don't want to say get it, because that sounds insulting to the other group, but they'll embrace it, whereas the others will always find, I guess, the edge cases and dwell on those.
Yeah, people will always be like, oh, but will it let us do this? Oh, but don't worry about what it won't let you do. Focus on the benefits of this process.
Yeah,
focus on what you are gaining.
Trees.
Exactly. You're gaining, you know, 90% better uptime. You're gaining, you know, fewer bug fixes you're actually having to provide because everything's so dynamic in these cloud environments. Just because you don't have a SQL agent job with the flipping platform as a service database. Oh, well, you could always look at managed instances, which I find is the harmony between the two.
Yeah.
Cloud, but with, you know, a little bit of love. But that's just my view.
I think that it's just one of those things, like that, as with anything in life, if you approach it as a learning experience and an opportunity to kind of embrace things, then I think you'll do wonders.
Yeah, I think a lot of the reluctance comes because of the upfront effort to get this thing set up. It doesn't come for free, of course. We're explaining the dream here, but yeah, you need to write those tests, you need to create those pipelines, learn that YAML maybe. But you need to acknowledge and communicate that message that in the long term it's just going to be so much better place to work and a far greater product at the end of the day. Yeah.
Even like if you just take the example of capturing a database in source control, it's not fundamentally easy.
You're really on the source control today, aren't you?
No, it's a great point though, but you can set that should be your first task, of course, and depending on your database, that could be easy, but yeah, I take the point that you may have some conflicts that may make that process a little bit more difficult, but yeah, you can get that database into source control, step one, and then go from there, yeah.
So it sounds like the biggest barrier might be people that are doubters and set about an initiative to fail.
Yeah, and people who are under time presses, of course. So you might have somebody screaming at you, where's this feature? You say, well, I'm going to write these tests first. You might get a lot of pushback from that, and just introducing that ethos and that company, culture in the whole company might be some challenges for certain places of work and certain people, yeah.
In my opinion, in my humble opinion, as I'm sure Chris will chime in.
Ever got a humble opinion?
In my opinion, I think the biggest barrier to DevOps personally is the phrase, I don't have time for this right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
In my mind, that's the thing I hear and the thing that always causes alarm bells in my head. why don't you have time for this right now? And then when you start digging into, you know, oh, I don't have time for this, I'm troubleshooting a problematic release. Okay, I'm firefighting production. Stop firefighting, yeah, my goodness.
Maintenance of the solution, yeah.
Exactly. Give everyone their fire safety training at the beginning. Make sure everyone's on board with that. Make sure no one's roasting marshmallows under highly flammable materials, right? You want
what? Where did that analogy come from?
I have absolutely no idea. I had a craving for marshmallows for some reason. No, but make sure that everyone is on board. So make sure that, and this is the thing, people talk about DBAs as being, or database administrators as being non-responsive to change, as being the people who say no, right? But DBAs fundamentally aren't the people who say no. They are the people who challenge your expectation. They ask more of you. They want to. They don't just want to say no, you can't have access to that data. They want to say no, you can't have access to that data because of these concerns or these concerns. And if you can answer those concerns, then that's great. And you know, DBAs are always looking to the future. The idea is that they're always optimizing performance on SQL servers, whether that be kind of on-premise actual physical boxes or Azure platform as a service. They are, you know, we're not talking about the DBA anymore, they are DevOps engineers. And it's the people who are now saying, I don't have time for this, who are the people pushing it back and pushing it back and pushing it back, and the business is suffering as a result. But largely that probably stems from the fact that they don't feel supported, which is why you need that culture. You need the culture to say, well, look, okay, I get that you don't feel supported. So what we're going to do is make sure that everybody shares this, everybody collaborates. Let's break down some of these silos. Is there a DBA resource somewhere else in the company that can help you out? You've got all of these potential options available to you, as well as, say, bringing in experts like Coeo and saying, right, you know, help us on this journey because we're not quite sure where to start and we need a leg up. And that's what it is. It's just a G up onto the DevOps platform.
And we frequently see organizations that cannot accommodate the business as usual kind of operational aspects and transformation at the same time. Mm. And they might need help with one or other of those aspects of keep the lights on, keep the systems running, and help guide us and steer us during that change process, because it's a really, you know, it's not easy to do, and it requires understanding and patience from management, because it's not that we're going to pause development for 6 months, but there's going to be an amount of investment of time and effort before we deliver an ROI. But the cadence, the pace that we can run at once we've made this upfront investment will be transformational and will enable the organization to move forwards much faster.
Absolutely, yeah. If you haven't got the time now, you're going to have to find the time when your project is 6 months late. So yeah, it needs that acknowledgement that it's really beneficial to put that effort in upfront, yeah.
Have you done any research about like the hour of investment today versus the ROI of that time later in terms of, you know, what the payback period is, and how could I help justify that to my boss if I'm a DBA or a developer?
So we've done a whole bunch of research around, you know, where people are with their DevOps journey. Uh-huh. Just anecdotally, obviously, we're able to speak to, you know, people who are adopting this DevOps process are generally seeing, you know, their teams being more productive, their teams being happier, they've got a standard. Obviously,
we have the ROI of database DevOps.
Yeah.
Page, that was a thing, wasn't it?
I'm pretty sure it maybe.
We spoke about that on a previous
podcast. I don't know the
podcast.
Link off the top of my head if you want me to give you the HTTP, but that ain't happening. But we have, obviously every year Redgate runs a state of database DevOps report, so okay, we're trying to figure out kind of where people are. And this year, I think we had like three times as many respondents, well into many thousands of people replying. And there were kind of a couple of key points that we took from that, which kind of indicates that more people are adopting this as more people do realise. I mean, I don't know, Chris, you've got
off the top of my head. I can now tell you that 49% of respondents now report that they deploy database changes to production weekly or more frequently. Just off the top of my head.
Definitely off the top of your head.
Definitely off the top
That's
of my head.
That's still 51% of people, though, that aren't doing that.
But, and I also think that probably Redgate customers are at the forefront of adopting change, and that there'll be, your customer base is probably not typical of organisations generally, globally. Is that fair?
So that's fair, absolutely. This particular State of Database DevOps report, though, which is openly available to anyone listening. Plug, 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 plug. this was actually a survey of people. It was run on SQL Server Central. It was run on SimpleTalk. It was run through
Okay, so these
forums.
Are not necessarily organizations that are bought from Redgate, yeah. But
this is
a wider
people using our competitors. This is people not using any tooling. Okay. This is just, you own a database, fantastic, fill in this survey.
Right, so it should be representative of this.
By and large,
state.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
Just off the top of my head.
Oh, no.
Frequent deployers who use version control report lower production defect rates.
You know, we'll never be invited back.
Well, I it's interesting because we know that, and anecdotally, Andy has worked on a number of customers in the past 12 months where they've been on that journey from legacy on-prem to cloud, and we talk about the benefits of DevOps, but we think it's going to help reduce defects in production. We think it's going to help decrease time to market for new features, and we know that is because of the customers that we work with, but for the length and volume of the engagements that we work with, the customers that we work with, we don't have thousands of data points on which to base that viewpoint and perspective. So it is interesting to support a lot of the benefits that we believe in and we evangelize when we're talking to customers. So it's great to have some evidence that supports those claims, I guess.
So that's a great point, though. Measuring that flow of work and how long things take is a key tenet of DevOps. So how do you know you're improving if you don't measure how long something... So an item of work gone onto your Kanban board, how long does that take to flow through to production? You want to drive that time down, and if you're not measuring it, you don't know. So yeah, that continual feedback and continuous improvement is key to a DevOps culture as well.
And I think that, you know, how do we determine whether this project has been successful or not, or this initiative has been successful? Do the business see new features more reliably, quicker to production?
Absolutely, yes. And even staff retention, you know, if you've got a big development team and that old way of working, are people leaving your company because they're just not, they're so stressed out and they're not happy in their work, can we make those numbers better? So there's measuring things at all levels of your business, yeah, is a key thing to do.
There's definitely an element of developers and those who work in the database as well have a desire to work on the latest cool thing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, people will chase what is flashy and what is new and what is fun. Like, I want to put everything in containers, but why? Because
I can.
Yeah.
Because I want a local K8 cluster running on my laptop.
Which sounds silly, but ultimately it is true. Like, you will increase retention if you invest in tooling for your developers. It's kind of obvious if you say it out loud, right? Like, people want to be working at places where they get invested in.
But again, that highlights the chasing of tooling, and some people can be after shiny, flashy things, but it, once again, once you get past the, you know, I want to use containers, or I want to, you know, I want to move away from our old Subversion system and use Git, for instance. Maybe, you know, you want to use Azure DevOps. Obviously, there's lots of different flavors of Git out there, Bitbucket, and, I want to think of one more, GitHub, naturally. You can, you know, people are always going to be chasing different tooling, but it's what it brings to the party. It's how it benefits those people and how it sets up better processes. So again, it's basically like you were saying at the beginning, right, is that it comes down to, it's not about the tools you have in place. It's about the people that you have being willing to change, being willing to adopt better processes, and actually breaking down, like I said previously, some of these silos that people tend to have, where there is a handoff, or as I affectionately refer to as chucking the pig over the fence. You know, it's not a case of that. It's about having feedback loops every single point that you can. It goes into source control, feedback loop. It gets reviewed on a PR, feedback loop. You maybe do it as pair programming, feedback loop, feedback loop, feedback loop, all the way through. And even monitoring your production systems. Oh, there's an errant query running on prod01. Fantastic. Let's have a look at that. Oh, okay, someone's put a select star in here. That's probably not ideal. Okay, what we'll do is feed that back to dev and make sure they improve that, reduce that technical debt that's going into the pipeline. But it's all about something that naturally we don't do very well, and that is, of course, communicate.
Yeah. And that comes as part of that whole cultural piece, right?
Yeah.
Like, you've got to be acceptant of feedback. Mm-hmm. There's the skill of delivering feedback. There's the skill of accepting feedback. If you've got that... we're going very new age again, but the whole growth mindset, then this feeds very naturally into it. You want to adopt new things, you want to improve, you want to continuously learn, then yeah, all of this.
That's really important, because creating an environment where it's safe for people to give and receive feedback, and people actually seek feedback of, you know, are you happy with how I'm working, and is there something that I could do which is smarter, easier, better, to help that workflow downstream be more efficient and reduce the friction so that we can together deliver better for the business.
Yeah, there's a great book, the DevOps Handbook, the same author as the Phoenix Project you mentioned earlier, and one of the key things in there is the improvement of daily work is more important than actually doing daily work. Mm-hmm. So the payback over time, if we can make that process slicker and faster and more reliable, we're going to maybe releasing many times per day, and that iteration, that improvement will just pay back so much over time. So yeah, continually improving and monitoring.
So we've talked a lot about the benefits of DevOps, the barriers to adoption, how organizations can start the journey, and what's important. Hopefully we've espoused the benefits enough that we've piqued the interest and whetted the appetite of anyone listening. One of the things that we've done traditionally on this podcast is one of our values is thirst for knowledge. So we've invited our guests to kind of make a suggestion or a recommendation of a resource that might be an article, podcast, resource that they found particularly useful. Is there anything that you guys can think of that you would like to recommend or encourage
listeners? Can you think of any podcasts people could listen to?
We've already talked about DBL. We can't recommend that again.
You can't talk about it enough.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll end up like that film. There was a film called Rhubarb, where everyone just said rhubarb the entire time. That was the entire dialogue throughout the entire film.
Anyway,
your recommendation first.
My recommendation, we've talked about it a few times already, but the State of Database DevOps report. Mm. We've got the 2020 version out now, live. Mm. That came out about a week or so ago.
Okay.
Great resource, if I do say so.
There was a webinar about it as well, where Kendra Little broke it down with Kellen Potman-Gorman from Microsoft.
Cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's probably the first port of call for anyone who's in the database world interested in the state of DevOps at the moment.
Mm. I think my recommendation was going to be Phoenix Project, but now we've already mentioned it, I kind of feel like that's a cop-out. So can I have two? Can I be sneaky?
Yes,
have two?
Go ahead.
Wonderful. Okay, so there was one that was Netflix do a thing called Chaos Engineering, which is really cool, where they basically randomly will take down just a random part of their infrastructure to test that it is resilient enough.
Oh, wow.
And they basically programmed this, and it will affect any part of their infrastructure at any given time, random intervals, and it could be a big thing or a tiny thing, and they've got to find it and fix it. And if you go out and have a look for Netflix's, they've got a bunch of videos
on Netflix
DevOps.
The Netflix development blog is amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
Really good. They're really open about their development practices,
their failures as well as their successes, and it's really good place to learn.
They're really cutting edge with what they do as well.
And then speaking as another way to learn, and my final one, and I will shut up, but it's the SQL community Slack channel. So I love the SQL family hashtag on Twitter. I'm all about kind of sharing that goodness. I blog as well. I could have plugged my blog, couldn't I?
Yeah,
I didn't.
You could have. You still can.
Plant-based SQL. No, it wasn't me. But the thing I love is there's a Slack channel that anyone could join, anyone in the data community, whether it be you're talking about Azure, you want to know more about DBA tools PowerShell or PowerShell in general, or you want to know, they've even got an Oracle part there. If you're working kind of dual platform, there's a whole bunch of stuff in that SQL community Slack channel, and anyone's free to join. So just Google SQL community Slack. It'll be the first post that comes up. You can join that by invitation. It's right there with everything you need. And anytime you have questions or thoughts or issues, obviously you can speak to the experts like the wonderful guys at Coeo. But if it's one of those kind of quick and dirty, oh, my VM's just fallen over, I'm not quite sure why, then you can just post it there. And people are so responsive and helpful. No one's judges at all. It's wonderful.
Brilliant. Awesome. Really valuable. Andy, do you have something?
Yes, well, I am going to cop out and mention the DevOps handbook I said earlier. That's by Gene Kim, Patrick Dubois, and John Willis. A fantastic resource. Starts with an overview about DevOps and then gives key steps you can take to get on your journey. So I would really recommend reading that book, yeah.
Thanks very much, guys. That's been really useful, and really appreciate you guys making the trip down to Reading to see us and spend the afternoon together.
Thanks very much for having us.